It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and it's great to be back with you this Monday. And of course, we want to send a big congratulations to the U.S. national team, the World Cup winners, and a pretty great moment over the holiday weekend. We have lots of stuff to get to, so let's get started, and we're starting with 2020. As we get closer to the next presidential election, the Democratic Party has been moving further to the left in some notable ways.
I strongly believe that we need to have Medicare for all.
The Green New Deal itself is a resolution to be more expansive.
If you were to put $1,000 a month in their hands, they use it in the most positive and beneficial way possible.
But on some issues, the Democratic Party has also expressed deepening divisions between establishment Democrats like former Vice President Joe Biden.
I believe Democrats want to unify this nation. That's what our party's always been about.
And more progressive candidates like Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
There's a lot to be learned from countries in Scandinavia and Western Europe.
They want to hear about how you really are going to break up those tech giants and big ag and the big banks.
And that tension within the party is also playing out in Congress. At the end of June, the House and the Senate passed a bill that directed $4.5 billion worth of funding to the border. But 95 House Democrats voted against the bill. They were concerned that it gave the Trump administration too much discretion over how to spend the funds. Over the weekend, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi gave an interview to the New York Times where she was asked about some of the progressive Democrats who opposed the border bill, including Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib. Pelosi said, quote, "All these people have their public whatever and their Twitter world, but they didn't have any following." Here's how Tlaib responded to Pelosi's comments on Sunday on ABC's This Week.
Uplift the women, especially the women of color within your caucus that are out there, because I'll tell you, more people like us, more people like me that come out to vote, we win. All of us win.
Different visions emerging from different generations of the Democratic Party, creating rifts within the party at a critical moment for the left. Joining me now to discuss Democratic messaging heading into 2020 is Laura Barrón López, national reporter for Politico. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Joan Walsh, national affairs correspondent for The Nation. Thanks for being with us, Joan.
Glad to be with you.
So, Laura, let's start with you. I mean, off of the New York Times piece about Nancy Pelosi, this isn't the first time that Pelosi's been, dismissive towards Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and some of the other young progressive women of color in the party. Why do you think she's willing to go after Democrats like AOC so publicly?
Right. So initially, Ocasio-Cortez, as well as Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, took issue with Pelosi. So they kind of launched some attacks themselves first because they were very upset with this border aid bill, which sent money down to the border to hopefully relieve some of the crisis that's going on there with children and migrants and at detention facilities. And so they were upset that this bill didn't include any kind of standards for hygiene and nutrition for these child migrants. And they lobbed some attacks at Pelosi, got very upset with leadership. And so Pelosi responded. And part of the reason she does this is also because she's trying to protect the moderate wing of her party, the vulnerable Democrats who put the party in the House majority. And so this is her bit of strategic maneuvering to try to shield them in the larger messaging battle.
I'll talk a little bit more about who those moderate Dems are and how vulnerable they actually are. But Joan, I want to get your take on Speaker Pelosi's comments to the New York Times over the weekend. Who is she trying to appeal to here? And how did you interpret those comments?
Well, on one level, I feel like everybody is playing an assigned role. You know, she has to stand up for the moderates, or she feels she has to. We can discuss whether she does have to or not, but they are a larger part of her caucus. And, you know, she has been taking incoming from some of these newly elected progressive leaders. But I've been watching this, you know, since the session began. And initially, my reporting was, and I did a profile of Pramila Jayapal, who is the chair of the House Progressive Caucus, and she has played a real in-between role, you know, working with Pelosi, but also working with her progressive, new progressive leaders who she wants to mentor. And, you know, for a while, I felt like they all had it kind of under control. They were not going to be played against each other. There was a constant effort in the beginning of the session. If you remember, Rashida Tlaib said a word I can't repeat on the air about we're going to
impeach
somebody, this something. And Pelosi dodged a couple of attempts to get her to challenge Tlaib and say, you know, chasten her, censure her. She said, I won't do that. But now I think the result of this funding, border funding bill, has genuinely left bad feelings on both sides. They're really, you know, as Laura says, what these women, what these progressives were asking for is really very small when you break it down to, you know, nutrition and hygiene. But Pelosi felt like she got the best deal she could. And how could anybody stand in the way of getting at least some funding to alleviate this crisis? And this is a battle, I think, that's going to be played out many times, you know, in the next year.
Laura, you've been covering this for a while. Do we know how Democrat voters felt about the lack of unity in dealing with the border bill? And I want to talk a little bit about this outside of the Twitter sphere, which I feel like if you're a media person or you're a Politico, then that's where you're sort of, you know, in this bubble. But outside of that, what are Democratic voters feeling about the border bill and whether or not they supported the version that actually ended up passing?
So, as you mentioned, Tanzina, if you look at the Twitter world, yes, it looks as though everyone is up in arms. Progressives are furious. You know, this is do or die. But honestly, when you look at polling, a number of Democratic voters, you know, want to see aggressive action by Congress, but they also want to see immediate relief. And that's something that Senate Democrats wanted to respond to. And that is why this wasn't just, you know, Republicans or Trump forcing Pelosi to accept this bill. Senate Democrats were very much on board with what ultimately passed, and they pretty much told House Democrats, look, we want to go with this. We're not going to make really any tweaks, and let's just get this done and send some money down there. And I think that the overwhelming majority of voters are okay with that. And also that they're distracted by other issues, not just this, but healthcare and wages. And so when I've been on the trail, that's what I hear about the most, not so much the crisis on the border.
And Laura, I'm wondering, is this a case of incumbents like Pelosi just not being progressive enough? Or are there other factors at play in this sort of divide, at least is how we're seeing it?
I think it's very difficult to label Pelosi as not progressive given her record as a politician. She, for a long time, has been one of the most progressive in the chamber. But yes, we are seeing this new class of progressive Democrats that have come in the 2018 wave, and they are different politicians to a degree. Ocasio-Cortez acts much more as an activist in her position. We've seen that in the way that she challenges her colleagues, her Democratic colleagues on Twitter. And there's a bit of restlessness among the base and very diehard Democrats. And so I think that 2020 will be illustrative in how far that movement is able to go. Because in 2018, honestly, even though there were a lot of primary challengers to sitting Democrats and sitting Republicans, only four out of a large number defeated sitting incumbents, and two of those were Democrats. And so one of those was Ocasio-Cortez. So it's very difficult to tell whether or not this will increase in 2020 and whether or not there actually is a lot of wind at their backs.
We can't end the segment without talking about Joe Biden, who up until very recently has been considered the moderate, the centrist, you know, must win campaign. And frankly, that's been challenged after the first Democratic debate. Over the weekend, Biden apologized for comments he made about working with segregationist senators to get things done in Congress. What do some of his recent statements about race reveal to us about the different generations of the Democratic Party as we approach 2020, and also more broadly, this sort of centrist white male candidate versus, you know, candidates like Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris or even, you know, Julian Castro?
You know, I think Vice President Biden did not do himself any favors by coming out rather belligerent last week and insisting, you know, basically that thing that a lot of us white folks do, which is, you know, my heart, I don't have a racist bone, wherever the racist bone is. I haven't found it. But, you know, a really defensive, I was Barack's vice president. You know me, I couldn't be guilty of these things that you're accusing me of. When in fact, he was guilty of some of what he was being accused of. He really took the lead. He did not simply vote with the segregationists on busing measures. He led them. You know, if he was going to apologize, he should have just apologized. Kamala Harris's attack would never have happened. He had a back and forth with Cory Booker, which was like a manhood test. You know, no, I'm not going to apologize. You apologize. Cory should apologize. And then he apologizes. And that, I think, is going to be a big problem for Vice President Biden.
Laura, is the Democratic Party ready to move away from the centrist white male candidate, a.k.a. Joe Biden and company?
Well, that's the big debate raging right now in this primary. And part of the issue that I think drawn so many Democrats to Biden is what happened in 2016. A lot of the Democrats I've spoken to kind of have PTSD because they're very worried that if they go for a female candidate or if they go for a candidate of color, that person may not be able to beat Trump. And then the pushback to that is, well, electability is a bit of a code word for let's just not elect a minority or someone that looks different. Polling, even though, yes, it is a snapshot in time, seems to suggest that Democrats are starting to think that Biden may not be the best option for them. And the debate did a lot of that. Also, Elizabeth Warren, who has run this steady race of issuing very detailed policy proposals from the very beginning and making strategic plays for Black voters and for Latino voters, and she and Kamala Harris have been able to rise in the polls because of that. And also in head-to-head matchups with Trump, they appear to be beating him. So that's helping their case as well. Again, it's months away from the first primary, so we have to see whether or not Democratic voters in Iowa and New Hampshire actually break with someone like Biden because he's leading in those states right now.
And miles to go. Laura Barrón-López is a national reporter for Politico, and Joan Walsh is a national affairs correspondent for The Nation. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.